I also was like, hey, and I'm going to grad school. Like, I'm getting my master's. And he goes, oh, what are you studying? I was like, music business.
Yeah.
He goes, like, how to be a predator? And I was like, oh! I was like, hold up. Yikes, dude. That being said, we were talking about, quote, exploiting copyright last week. And how exploit is a positive term from an industry lawyer. I was like.
Yeah, some people just, a lot of people just don't understand it, man. They just don't understand it. But there are a bunch of pieces of shit out there. But, you know?
Yeah. 100%.
But I like to think that cream rises to the top, man. Good people win.
I think so.
Welcome to Made for Music, brought to you by Stitch Records. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. For those of you who are unfamiliar, this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive picture of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, discover the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is, and sign up for the newsletter at madeformusicpodcast.com so you can be the first to hear about all the new content, alumni news, and insights into the ever-evolving music business. Today's a really exciting episode because, speaking of alumni, we are bringing back one of my favorite guests of all time, Jake Crocker. I don't want to give away too much of the interview, but we get to juxtapose where he was at 4 years ago in his initial interview with what he's accomplished over the past couple of years, and it is really such an inspiring and heartwarming story, and it's just great to see amazing people continue to do amazing things. As I mentioned, the podcast is brought to you by Stitch Records. Cross Stitch, aka Aaron Karstensen, is the founder of Stitch Records. He has a background in sound design from Berklee College of Music, and there is truly no one I trust more to deliver the best sounding mixes than him. He has actually produced and mixed every single song I have released as DB Stewart. If you want to get a hold of him, check out the handle XStitch Music, that is X STITCH Music on Instagram. He's got a lot of short form production mixing tutorials, and in his bio, he's got a link tree to point to all his long form courses as well. But without further ado, we have an incredible episode. So without further ado, please enjoy the return of Jake Crocker.
Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast makes his return after nearly 4 years. At the time, he had just come off the heels of multiple sold-out shows and was preparing to perform at some of the biggest regional festivals, including Paradiso, Capitol Hill Block Party, and Bumper Shoot. That sounds like it'd be tough to beat, right? Wrong. This man has accomplished so much in the past 18 months, it feels absurd to try and even address it all. Built a badass studio here in Seattle, where he continues to develop artists at Hilltop Records, signed a publishing deal with Sony Music Publishing, got married, and just announced he is expecting. So please, without further ado, welcome one of the most talented, kind, and hardworking producers on the planet, Jake Crocker.
What? Come on, bro.
Had to be
ready
done
for all that, bro. I got the thank you, man.
Yeah,
thank
of
you.
Course. I was so happy writing that because I listened back and I looked at like my original notes 4 years ago and remember thinking like, holy crap, this is a lot. And then I was like, wait, let's like do a little rewind here.
You took me back there.
Had to.
I forgot about some of those things. Oh yeah. Feels like a different life, dude.
I imagine. That's actually something I wanted to touch on a little bit because 4 years ago, you talked about having these like really lofty goals. Yeah. And like it's really hard to sit and appreciate what's happened because the goals are just so high. And you've achieved a lot. And my question to start was, because your aspirations have been so high, have you had that chance to step back and appreciate it?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that's a great question. And it's always a mountain, of course. But I've definitely worked. I'd say I've worked really, really hard in the past couple of years to find a better version of myself. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, being in the moment and being aware of my surroundings and all that. So, I've had a good amount of time to step back, but it's kind of this, it's got to be a healthy balance. You know, you step back too much, then you lose yourself. But, you know, you stay in it too much, then you don't see what you're accomplishing. So best of both worlds. And I'm, you know, still working on a better version of me, but we're getting there every day. So
that's beautiful.
Thanks, man.
Do you think there was a turning point where you went, oh, snap, there needs to be a little more balance? Or was that just kind of an ongoing journey?
That's another great question. I mean, I think a lot of it, I mean, COVID put a ton of shit in perspective for me, right. You know, of just like stopping and like being forced to stop for the first time, you know, like that, I think that's what it was. And I think it did that for a lot of people, you know, it made a lot of people stop working their normal job, having their normal routine. And obviously that was super challenging for many different reasons, but now that we're kind of starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, like I'm seeing the purpose of it all, and I think that's really what did it for me, and just took a step back to reevaluate everything and reevaluate what like spending time with people and spending time being creative, what does that mean, you know, not necessarily creating too much expectation, because a lot of that gets in the way of the creativity, you know.
Well, speaking of expectation, I don't know if you remember this, it was Summer Smash.
Oh yeah,
that was down like August 2019.
Wow.
Do you remember what you said to me right before you did your set?
Oh my, no.
I knew you would say no.
Please.
But so you came up and you were like, "Hey, I just met your dad," and you were like, "Hey, there's this guy Dempsey I'm working with."
Yeah.
But you called it in like August 2019. We got it. And I was like, "Well, what happened?" You're like, "Oh, we've been working on this project for a while, but like we got it."
Yeah.
Sounds cool. like sure. I was just curious, like COVID hits, right? Mm-hmm. And if a lot of people, it did stop, but that was when y'all took a lot of steps forward. So I'm curious what that pivot looked like for you. Because things stop. Obviously, the world looks completely different, basically at the flip of a switch.
Yeah. And that was probably one of the most interesting times of my life, because I've been very close before in the past. I've been to a place where I thought it was it. Like, it's going to happen next. It's going to happen next. And like, I mean, I've been doing this for 13 years now. It's like I've had moments in each of those years that it's like, oh, this is it, you know? And that was another one of those moments once like the TikTok started going and the songs started going and stuff. And then the label showed up, and then COVID literally, it was like in the course of 3 days, it just, everything was off the table. It was like, oh, we don't know what's going on, because all that happened and nobody was going into the office anymore, and all of the budgets were frozen and nobody was signing. It was just weird. It was a weird time. So, but for us being little fish in that situation, you know, comparatively to like the label, right? They don't give a shit about us in that situation. They're like, we got to protect our bankroll. We got to figure out what's going on in the world. So we were off the radar at that point, and it was like, no, it was like another one of those, oh, it's gone. And you know, we stuck it out. That was a tough time, but stuck it out, kept creating, and then another moment you know, started showing its head with Time Flies. And then long story short, then the labels came back, and then the publishing companies came back, and it was just a crazy time, dude.
With the stop and go of that, there's obviously, I'm sure, deals being talked about or like floated around. Mm-hmm. What would you say was the positive of being able to like step back?
Yeah, it teaching patience. I mean, that's exactly what it teaches you. It's just like, shut up and just keep doing what you're doing. Like, that's, I mean, my manager, I always call him. I'm like, oh, dude, big idea, like this and this and this. And then I'm stressed about this. And then like, I don't know if this is going to happen or what. And then he's just like, dude, head down, bro. Just keep doing what you're doing. And like, that's what I've been told my entire career, is just keep doing what you're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was another one of those situations where it's like, I have no control over this.
Right.
So my only option is to just keep doing what I'm doing. So
That
was totally one of those moments. So, you know, it teaches you patience. So,
and I have an ignorant question to follow that up.
Please.
Were you aware of like what a publishing deal was before all that started going?
Yeah. I was aware enough, let me say that, you know, aware enough to know that it's kind of like something that a producer and a songwriter on my side of things can strive for, you know, and because like an artist, like you hear a record deal, right?
Right.
And then a lot of people don't understand what a publishing deal is. It's kind of like a record deal for a producer in a way, but in a lot of different ways as well, you know, because artists can still sign publishing deals, but it's regarding an entirely different side of their artist project type of thing, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so I was definitely aware of what it was, but as like things started getting realer, I had to obviously kind of dive into the nitty gritty of it all. So.
Yeah, I imagine, especially when like a massive company like that rolls up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrifying. Yeah. And I made that clear. I was like, I don't do corporate, you know, I don't do this. Like, right. I've never worked for a corporate company. I've never been a number in a system. Like, how are you going to convince me that I'm not just going to be that if I sign to you guys? You know, and that was a big part of that conversation. And, you know, that's when I really got to build a great relationship with my A&R. And yeah, the rest is history, man.
And with that, what were you hoping to get out of it?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was like I'd been working for so long, and I have so much material, you know, and I just have been stockpiling ideas for that entire 13 years. Not to say like the first half of those ideas were very good, but like still,
right, yeah.
You know, then you still got six, seven years worth of ideas that are there. But, but yeah, man, I really just wanted to, I was ready to take that next step in my career, like take a chance, you know? I like rolling the dice on things, and I put a lot of trust in people, which is, you know, people advise me not to in this industry, but I've just said fuck it all the way along. And that's why a lot of the relationships that I have rocked with this whole time are based on a handshake, and that's how it works.
Right.
You know, because I'm loyal to my people and my people are loyal to me. So it's like, I don't know.
That's awesome. And with that, was what you were looking for, like, hey, I've got all this music that I want to get in front of the right people? Or is it more a sync thing? Like, hey, here's this giant catalog that, of course, like one or a team of five people isn't going to be able to.
It's kind of a little bit of both. Like, my thoughts behind it is like, oh my God, okay, they're probably going to like send me things that they want me to do every day. Like, and then I got to do this. And I learned very quickly that it was like the most nonchalant thing ever. It's just like, hey, we want to help you do what you want to do. Hmm. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I get to think you know, about what do I want to do? And I've always wanted, I never really wanted to just kind of shoot up and be a huge pop producer overnight type of thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes from me, you know, being a kid and feeling like I was ready and realizing I'm not, and having that year go by and then feeling like I'm ready and realizing I was not. So so I was looking for a slow build, and I that's, you know, what I've been doing, and I love artist development. And that was something that all the publishing companies were like, wow, that's dope. You know, because a lot of people go into these situations and are like, hey, I want to work. I instantly want to get in the studio with so-and-so. I want to get in the studio with so-and-so. And it's like, whoa, like, you only get one shot to get in the studio with that person. Like,
right.
What do you love to do? And for me, I'm like, I love shaping artists' sound. I love bringing an artist in and having them not necessarily understand what they want to be or what they want to say, and just helping extract that from them, you know. And that was very exciting for everybody, because there's a lot of new artists that are being signed, that especially in today's world where TikTok is blowing up kids who, this is their first song, you know. It's like, then those artists need development, and that's, you know, part of what I love to do. So it just kind of played hand in hand with that. But on top of it too, it's just, you know, the sync side of things is great, you know, just having people constantly sending your stuff to other people and being on top of it. It's just more arms out there sending more things in more directions, man, you know.
I have a friend that signed just like an ad. It was a publishing deal. It was an admin deal.
Oh, nice. Cool.
She was like overjoyed, because she was like, I just don't want to do like that whole like paper pushing, all that stuff.
That's a lot of that admin work too. Like, a lot of huge producers will sign like an admin deal, because they don't necessarily need people to put them in rooms, or like, hey, this artist, you should work with this producer, you know. They don't need that. They just need somebody to collect their publishing, essentially. Yeah,
that could be a whole nother conversation. Or the fact that it was not digitized until 2018 is crazy.
Yeah.
I already released like a mini podcast about that, where I just like tried not to rant but I was like,
time.
Here's four organizations you have to be a part of just to collect your royalties on one song.
This is how ancient the process is.
Yeah, it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Was that part of your conversations then with Sony Music Publishing? You mentioned kind of articulated, like, hey, I don't do this corporate thing, but, and that they like the artist development side of things. Did region come into play when you were talking about that? Because you built your own studio and such. Mm-hmm. Was that something that was communicated?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, at the beginning of it all, I'm in my head, I'm like, shit, do I have to move to LA? Like, what do I got to do here? And all that. And, you know, that bounces in and out of my mind all the time. But it's For me, man, the whole point of building a studio here was to create a space for people to get away and for people to be able to come and be creative in a different space. And I've been, you know, lucky enough to be in a position now where people are coming out to Seattle to experience time in the studio, in not just with me, but just with the environment, the people that come around. And it's a fun place to get away from your kind of normal studio situation. So that's what I wanted to create. And it's been great as I'm finding more artists like through the whole Sony situation to help develop and stuff, just having a place for them to get out of LA for a minute if they right. want, you know. And yeah, so region definitely plays its role for sure. But also with the whole publishing deal thing going on in the middle of COVID, it was everybody had to figure
right.
it out. So
yeah,
everybody was still, they were already at home. They were all, everybody who lived in LA was back in Colorado or back in Michigan or back in New York or whatever it was. So everybody just had to make it work. Or even people who were in LA, it's like the beginning of it all. Everybody, nobody was driving across town to do sessions unless it was with somebody close that you know, right. and you're hopping on Zoom, even if it's just across town. And so everybody had to make it work. I think it was like the perfect time to not live in LA and sign a publishing deal. So,
right.
you know, look at it from a positive light.
Totally. And then you get the output and like, oh, I can't really, no reason to change anything.
Yeah.
Just, like displace you after yeah. the fact, yeah. which is awesome.
That was the weirdest part. That was like signing a deal and not like meeting any right. of the people. That right.
They're like, hey, we're going to fax you a contract.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, yeah. Now, I was lucky enough though to meet my A&R, which like it meant a lot to me to be able to just walk around and drink a cup of coffee and like have a conversation, not right. across a computer screen. So
yeah. And it's such a big world to navigate, like even under publishing itself, all these components. Like I'm assuming most folks know what an A&R, but do you mind walking through it if folks are unfamiliar?
What's yeah. so there? Basically, an A&R's job in today's world is a little different than what an A&R's job would have been back in the day. But in today's world, an A&R is finding new talent. It's artists and repertoire. So they're finding new people to bring to the table. In my situation, specifically with regards to production and songwriting, my A&R is going out and okay, who's popping off? Who just got signed to this label? They've got a really cool sound that I think would work with Jake. And it's the beauty of my specific A&R in this situation is that he takes a ton of time to find people that he actually thinks would work well with me versus just kind of throwing sessions at me and right. trying to see what works. Cause a lot of people that I talked to about the whole publishing thing, it's like, oh yeah, I hated this cause my publisher they just put me in a ton of sessions and it was weird and it was this and that. But you know, I feel really catered to because he knows my sound and you know, I've got a great team in New York too that are more on the hip hop side, so it's best of both worlds when it comes to the publishing thing for my situation, which I'm super grateful for. And yeah, man, so that's the short of it.
And you actually read my, I had a question for you. It's gonna sound off kilter. What do you look for, say, in artists or business partners other than folks that have names that have long E's?
Ronnie, Vinny, yeah. Dempsey.
Vinny, Macy. Oh
my God. Dude, I'm just surrounded by the E's.
Long E's, man.
Hey, people call me Jakey sometimes.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. You know, man, it all boils down to who do you want to hang with? Man, it's so simple. It's so simple. Like, who's a good hang? Who do you want to kick it with and like maybe make music 10% of the time, but just kick it 90% of the time? That's somebody that you want to blow up with. That's somebody you want to ride with. That's somebody you want to go on a future tour with, you know? So it all starts with that relationship. And if that relationship isn't there, then I would probably be willing to bet that that is not going to be something that grows. And if it does, it's probably going to explode pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, so I always look at character. I look at who I can relate to and who's different than me too, because this whole thing, I'm not trying to surround myself with people that have the exact same skill set as me and write the exact same type of songs as me and talk about the same things and grew up in the same neighborhood. It's like, no, we all come from different backgrounds and we all teach each other all kinds of different shit. So I look at character, man. I look at who wants this too. Because yeah. being in it for so long, like I can finally be like, yeah, no, I just didn't quit, man. Like, no, I had it. I just kept going and kept going and kept going. And it's nice to be in that position. It's obviously, it's like, yeah, you know, wish things might have happened a little sooner or whatever. Right. But, you know, but to be in this position now and to be able to help the artists that I'm working with who typically haven't been doing it as long as I have, to be like, hey, look, I'm still not there yet, but I'm still doing it. So let's keep it pushing, you know? So, yeah.
We've talked about patience a lot. What is another skill you'd say that was super valuable that you've learned along the way?
Man, gratitude. You know, people want to be appreciated, and yeah. I appreciate a lot of people, and but it's important to make that known. And a lot of people forget about that in this industry, because once somebody does something for you, it's over. It's like, peace. Mm. Cool. I got what I needed out of the situation. Peace. And I don't respect that. I don't appreciate that. And, I try and carry myself, I try and carry a lot more gratitude in my day to day, especially when situations get bigger and bigger and bigger and people are trying to make things happen for you. It's like, have some gratitude, bro. Yeah. You know? So that's something I learned through it. Patience and gratitude together is like a really good pair. And add drive in there. It's like, okay, cool. You're good to go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
This is going to be a bit abstract, but speaking of gratitude, in the past 18 months, what overwhelmed you the most with gratitude and or just sparked kind of a sense of that?
I think there was a lot of moments on tour. Because we were out on tour with Ryan Carveo, who also had Vinny there, who's sitting right across me. Much love, my boy. It was all of our people were around us, and it was like, it was this unit, and it was also like kind of at the tail end, but still mid pandemic situation. So we're all like really wanting to play shows, and we haven't been able to play shows for so long, and we finally got a tour in our hands, and like, obviously there's a ton of obstacles along the way, but there were so many moments on tour where I was just like, man, this is dope. You know, I got my people around me, and that felt really good.
What was it like having developed some of those songs for so long and having not been able to play shows and then finally get an audience reaction?
It's really weird, because also like with the whole, when the biggest fan base that I've seen in my career came about with like the whole Dempsey thing and the TikTok thing, there was nothing to like make it tangible, you know, like besides numbers and an app, which are weird, or even just like not even fans, but just like people who enjoy the music. Like I hadn't seen someone's face light up when like a kick hits or like an 808 smacks them in the face. Like I hadn't seen that for so long. Just to see that and just to feel that meant a whole lot. It kind of made all those songs real. Mm. It made them feel like they're not just sitting on my hard drive still, you know, like right. A lot of the other songs are. So yeah, made it real again. And that's kind of what it's all about, man, is just playing these shows and being out there and seeing people react to it. And I missed it a lot, so it was nice to be out there again.
For sure. Did you have a favorite to either witness or get to be a part of on tour?
Show-wise?
Yeah.
Salt Lake City was crazy. It was like massive, like this huge stage. It was like sold out. It was amazing. Like Ryan has a huge fan base down there, so it was like awesome to have such a big crowd that night. But also like the night after that too, it was like a way smaller crowd in Denver, but it was like there's so much energy in the room too. Yeah. So they all had like a special place in my heart, but those two shows really stood out. I mean, Seattle was also amazing. Portland was also really cool. But it was good vibes you know, majority of the places. So
for sure.
Yeah.
In any songs that you produce, seeing them come to life, did you have one where you're like, oh, like this is what it was meant to do? Or
I think a lot of the unreleased stuff, that because we got to play a bunch of unreleased stuff on tour. Yeah. And to be able to see people react to it without ever hearing it was pretty tight, you know. And it's always fun when like something goes straight from your laptop to the stage. Like Vinny and I played a show the other day at Numo's, and like we made this whole intro like in the morning before the show.
Oh, what?
Yeah, so it was
ballsy. That's
so even dope. My cousins were staying over. My cousin came from Portland. He was like, wait, you made that this morning? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, that's crazy. Like, what? Now it's here, like at a show. Like, what? So that feeling is always really cool, you know? So that was nice to have some of those new ones nobody's heard kind of do
sure.
Well.
Has having that experience of going on tour influenced at all your approach? I know you'd done live before, of course, but did it influence your approach at all to the new stuff you've been making, just seeing what hit live?
Yeah, I mean, I usually don't like think in my head, like, oh my God, this is going to go off live. Like,
right.
Because it's kind of part of that whole expectation thing. Like, I'm creating an expectation for it. So not that I don't ever do that, but I try not to. So whatever I'm creating in the moment, it's like, look, it's either going to do well live or it's not going to do it live, it's whatever. But yeah, so I don't think it's really changed my approach or anything. It's just made me, it just gives you a different perspective when you're out on the road. You know, you're either, you're making entirely different sounds too while you're out there and, right, and stuff. So that influences it, but just being out there and having a little break from the normal craziness here was nice.
How did that work going on the road? You mentioned it's been pretty catered towards like your experience, but how did that work going on the road? Of course, being signed to a publishing deal, was mm-hmm. it, hey, I'm going to be taking a break, or was there expectations if you still need to deliver some stuff while you're on the road?
See, yeah, that was obviously a conversation of like, hey, I'm going to be gone for like a month and a half, but you know, I scheduled like a LA trip before tour, and I scheduled a few different sessions like while we were in LA for tour and things like that. So they don't hold anything over my head. Like, you need to do this. Like, if you don't do this, you're fucked, bro. Like,
right.
They don't do that. As
10 completed songs by like, the end of the month.
Yes. That honestly, like, before I signed, I was like, is that what it's going to be like? Is this going to be crazy like that?
That's how it gets positioned sometimes.
Yeah. No, man, it's so chill. And I just did some more sessions than I would have before tour, and then just to kind of even it out. But it's not like I needed to or anything, but I just wanted to. So I'm not letting the people who I, you know, am working with currently entirely fall off to the wayside. You know, just keeping everybody happy is my goal, bro.
For
trying
sure.
to keep everybody happy.
A lot of pieces to juggle.
Yeah.
You mentioned the team obviously being super important.
Yeah.
As you scale, how has your group dynamic evolved or team dynamic mm-hmm. evolved, say 4 years ago to now? And then
I've had to practice letting go of certain things and not being such a control freak, in many different aspects. On the business side, allowing my team to handle the things that they're there for was really tough. I won't say it is anymore because we have this really cool chemistry. And but that was tough at the beginning of like, okay, well, I kind of want that email, like, you know, like that, just that feeling. And that was a part of that whole practice, is just like letting go, understanding people are around you for a reason. And that just kept getting more and more real as, you know, I signed the publishing deal and I had a whole different aspect of a team then, you know, and just letting people do what they do, and they're here doing it, and I just got to keep doing what I'm doing, and they're going to keep doing what they're doing. So that team dynamic definitely changed too. But on the creative end, I've been far more collaborative with this publishing deal than I've ever been, because I've been working with all kinds of different people. I've been working with different producers and writers, and there's so many ideas. Like, sometimes I'll hop in a session and there's like five people there, and it's like, cool, we're going to make it work. We're going to be creative. And you just have to be open to these ideas and be willing to have your idea not work. You know, and that's a huge side of it too. It's just not being a control freak on that end, not being the person who always has the right thing,
right?
You know, and just being willing to shift and move and be comfortable. And it's about comfortability, dude. Making everybody else feel comfortable, making everybody feel like their ideas are heard. You know, even if it's not the greatest idea, that idea might make me think of a different idea, and my shitty idea that comes from that might make that girl think of this other idea, who makes this guy think of this idea. You know, it's just this chain reaction of things. And if you step too far into it and are too much of a control freak, you're gonna stop that process. And so that was a huge learning curve too, of just like letting go in that end too, on the creative end, and being open to collaboration.
I gotta work on that personally. You said five people and I was like, oh. But I hear you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Stepping into different sounds, has there been anything that surprised you, or genres that you didn't anticipate dipping your toe into?
Just produced a song called Library Card for this artist, Jay
this
Maya.
Nerd.
Yeah, literally, no, but she is coining this like really interesting like nerd pop. Like, that's her thing. I never thought I would produce that, but it's tight. It's really cool, and people love it. Like, that's, and it has its own audience. Like, I never thought I would be a part of that, but now I'm a part of that, which is amazing. You know,
throw that in your bio.
Yeah,
nerd pop producer.
Yeah.
I almost kicked myself for saying genre, because genre is such a weird thing now.
Mm-hmm.
But there really is. Now is the best time to carve out a niche.
Yeah. Yeah. People are doing it all the time. You know, a lot of people are doing it without even knowing they're doing it, which is tight.
100%. Yeah. Before I try to stump you on some things, not to get too abstract, but you mentioned like loving developing artists. Yeah. Like, what does the optimal state look like for you?
That's like a loaded ass question. Super, like, there's loaded. So many things. Like, you know, hey, dude, honestly, it all now revolves around just providing for my family, like at just a base level of life.
Right.
So, like, as long as whatever I'm doing is doing that, I'm a happy man. But anything on top of that, like, if I really got to wish, you know, like, I would love to have my own label, my own producer group, my own publishing company, my own something, you know. And I'm not here to define that yet or anything, but it's a huge part of my passion, building artists. It makes me happy watching people win. Mm-hmm. And being a part of that is just the icing on top of the cake, you know. Right. So man, I just want to keep making great music. It's as simple as that. I want to keep making great music. I want to keep working with the people I'm working with. I want to keep developing new relationships and helping the people I'm working with develop new relationships and bring them to the next level. Because there's a reason I'm working with, you know, people for years on end without even releasing music per se, because that's what development is, and it's trust, and it's knowing that this person has it. You know, that's why Vinny and I have been working for how many years now? Like four or five years, you know, and have known each other for even longer. And like, that's what it's all about for me, is just watching people grow on a personal level, first and foremost, but secondarily on a career note, on a musical note, on a creative note, watching people grow is like, ooh, man, it's happy. It makes me happy. You know, it's what I want to be around. So as long as I get to do that, whatever level that is, I'm, you know, obviously shooting for the moon, as I always am. But I just want to keep getting great records out there and hope that a lot of people listen to them.
I love that too. And not to keep doing callbacks, but I just think it's really cool to look at some of this in an ad hoc manner.
Mm-hmm.
When we first met, one of the things you talked about too was the importance of equipping folks and going to schools and teaching Ableton and stuff like that. So it's just really cool to see that through line and where it's taken you. And I know, like you mentioned, like, hey, would have been dope if this happened faster, but I am just gonna gas you up. And it's cool to see like someone who's just invested in the manner that you are, because there's so many people that are, give me what I need, get out of the way. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see good people win. And like I said, that through line, because that's exactly what you were saying 4 years ago. And not that you're going, someone validate that. I've always been the same guy. But it's really cool to see.
Thanks, man. That means a lot. Appreciate it. Yeah.
And then I'm going to pivot on you and try to get you stumped on some stuff.
Cool.
So we're going to start with Ronnie's Ruse here, which is, tell me about your first show in Florence, Oregon.
Oh, my God. That was... What a show. Anybody listening right now, massive air quotes on on show. We drove all the way down to Florence, Oregon, and like
coastal town.
Oh, dude, beautiful coast. Yeah. Little like on the coast, there's this like, there's these dunes, and it's just from Star Wars. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But we played, it was this show. Oh my God. We piled in this, in Ronnie's Element. He had this Honda Element, and it was just this box, and we were gliding down the freeway, so hyped to go rock this show, dude. And we show up to the venue. I'm throwing air quotes out for that too. It was this bar, and there was just like, it was like a country bar.
Oh no.
And there was, I think, like 15 people in it, not there for us, like drinking.
Right.
And then I was like, cool, where do you want me to set up my laptop and piano? And they're like, here. And I was, that's not a speaker though. And they're like, yeah, well, so I ran the whole set through an amp.
Oh no.
Yeah, DJed the whole thing through an amp.
Oh,
and
goodness.
There was this very, very large man in the front row, like yelling at us the entire show. Like, I'm gonna peek if I yell. It's like, yay! Like, he was just doing that the whole time. We're like, whoa, hey, okay. Whoa, you're freaking us out there, dude. Like, significantly louder than the amp, because it's not a speaker. It's just it's an amp running track and vocal and all that. So, dude, but that, we stayed in a hotel. We just, it was so fun, bro. It was the first time leaving my home and playing. a show, and it was just the biggest fucking piece of shit show you could you could find, but it made us so happy, man. And right. And I look back at those days, we still got the pictures and stuff, and it was just a I don't know, man. If I can be that happy at any of these future shows, like I'm doing something right, because that was what it's all about.
Yeah, you know?
That's what it's all about.
I'm even thinking about that. Juxtapose that with like a sold out show box. Or
I wish I had like a picture of the crowd so I could be like, if you fucked with me back then, because that was the epitome of back then, dude.
Oh, some of y'all weren't there when I was in Florence, Oregon.
Like most of y'all weren't there.
Oh, that's too good. Some either ors here, Paradiso or Bumper Shoot.
Are we saying what was better or what would I rather play now?
Sure.
Oh, man. Paradiso was crazy because it was just like the most beautiful venue.
Gorge, yeah.
One of the most beautiful venues on planet Earth. And getting a chance to, although it was very, very early, playing the main stage was, I looked up and I'm like, wow, the stage is like 70 feet above me. Like the truss, like, wow.
It was like the big panel.
How am I here? Right? Yeah, man. And that alone was just such a crazy visual and such a crazy experience. And my dad was like backstage with me just to my left during the whole set. Like those stages are different. It just feels different. And but Bumper Shoot is I just said Bumper Shoot and I would laugh at myself if I heard myself say that. Bumper Shoot.
I think I said that too, actually.
Bumper Shoot. Is a festival that I've been going to since I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. So, and I've played it multiple times now. I've played it 4 times now.
Damn,
I think.
Nice.
It's always special because it's the festival that's right down the street from my house where I grew up, and it's the place that I saw so many artists for the first time. And it's also the festival that my dad ran sound on the first Bumper Shoot.
No way.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, crazy. So it that one's deeply rooted. So
yeah,
either or, I can't pick. Sorry.
Fair. You only get one, contact or serum?
Contact, there's way more in it.
True. Fair. When is the last time you used Cyimplant?
Whoa. My producer nerds are going to be like, whoa. See, I'm going to go use it tonight. Now that you said it. Actually, I did pull it out for a session. I don't know if I found anything to use from it for the session.
Right.
But last time I pulled out was probably like 3 months ago or something.
Nice.
It's one of those like every 3 month plugins.
Yeah. So let's get weird with it. I felt your qualms with LA teriyaki in my bones from when I would go visit. What is your favorite teriyaki joint in Seattle?
RIP Hana on Broadway. COVID took him out, but that was my favorite teriyaki of all time.
Yeah.
All time. So if anybody's listening to this and they know where I can get that type of teriyaki. Shit. Oh, man. But current favorite. Shout out BB's Teriyaki. Fellow St. Joe's grad of mine.
Oh, nice.
Started BB's. Great teriyaki, different take on it. I got to shout out Teriyaki Madness because they're very consistent, always there, great portions, right? But any of my O'Day bros who are listening right now would slap me if I didn't say Yoshino's, because that was where we got lunch every day. And so shout out those three. I'll go top three right there. Boom.
Hell yeah. Have you found a decent one in LA?
No. Nope. I'm opening one.
Oh yeah?
No.
Oh, I was like, damn, that's
someday.
I was like,
we were just talking about goals, bro.
Yeah, I know. My bad. I got excited. I was like, that's a pivot.
Yeah, opening my first restaurant. Finna sink all of my future funds into that. So
you're
cool.
Like, this music thing was cool and all.
It was tight. But let's switch
LA
this podcast up. They do though, bro.
Dude.
I've ordered teriyaki there. Bad decision.
Can't do it.
Very sad.
I didn't realize how many other places didn't have it, like
anywhere
else?
No other places.
Yeah, even when I went to school in Oregon, I was like, oh.
Could you imagine how insane, like, a teriyaki cart would go in New York on a corner?
Well, it depends where it's placed.
The best corner.
Yeah, the best corner. I was just thinking, there's also a lot of stuff that comes from underground and swooshes on through.
Yeah, everybody eats it all the time, man. You know, all those halal carts, they go hard, man. Imagine getting a teriyaki cart out there. That'd be going crazy.
That would be
We were just talking about future goals. I'm putting that on.
There you go.
I'm going to open a teriyaki cart in New York.
Have your A&Rs out there. Be like, hey, you want me to fly out? You get me a cart. You put it on the corner. I'm going to need some materials. Like, I'll do the session, but then...
They just say, no.
You're like, then I'm not coming.
I'm like, and they're like, you're not big enough to make those calls, buddy. And I'm like...
You're like, oh, yeah?
Watch me sink my entire life savings into... a teriyaki spot just to make that point. But
oh my god, that would be something. That would be a story.
It would be quite the story. It'd be a sad one.
Yeah, and I'll recycle something from 4 years ago to see how things have pivoted, if at all. Mm-hmm. If you could only play one spot in Seattle the rest of your career, what venue would it be?
Don't tell me what I said last time.
I won't.
Ooh, I wonder if it changed.
That's why I asked. It's selfishly. I was just like, I'm really curious.
Showbox Soda or Showbox Market is one of my favorite just places in the environment. But I can't neglect Numo's because there's so many memories there. So many memories there. And downstairs, backstage, Numo's is something different. So I'm going to go Numo's.
Oh, I like it.
What did I say last time, Showbox?
Last time you said Showbox, but you loved it because you like played it.
Yeah.
And then... Paramount.
I always hold Paramount as like the most beautiful venue. I thought you were talking about ones like I've already played. I've never played Paramount. That's the one. I've never played Paramount, so I don't really hold it in like the if I could play it again type of things.
Right, but
I mean, Paramount is so beautiful, dude. It's a different spot.
It sounds amazing.
It does sound great.
Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Dude, absolutely.
It was great to catch up. And I guess before we bounce out here, what do you got going on? Where can people find you?
Oh man, Vinny and I are dropping music like wildfire right now. So go get that Up Down out now. Go get that. We got some shows to announce. Can't talk about it just yet. A whole bunch of releases with all the different people that I'm working with right now. It would take a while to name everybody, but they're all amazing and all doing great things. So a ton of releases. I mean, you can see it all on my Instagram. Go follow me there. And yeah, man, it's going to be a fun year.
Hell yeah. Thanks again for taking the time, man. It's super exciting. Pew. Congrats on everything.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate you. Yeah. That intro is still ringing in my head.
All right on.
Run it back
again. Yeah, just close it with the intro again.
Right on, man. Dude, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
Peace.
Cheers. Shouts out to Jake for making his return to Made for Music. Be sure to follow him on Instagram at @IamJakeCrocker. In his bio, if you want to see what he's all about, he's got a link to a Spotify playlist called Jake Crocker Produced It, where you can get all the latest songs he's produced, from Sam LeChow to Jay Maya, Anna Thompson, and more. And if you dig what you hear on the podcast, brought to you by Stitch Records, the only place I trust to mix my tunes, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and I'll see you next time.